If you're listening to this, there's a good chance this hits close to home. If you have a neurodivergent athlete who struggles with emotional outbursts, shutting down after mistakes, or losing confidence during games, you're not alone. And more importantly, you're not stuck. At Thankfully, we offer the Performance Lab, which is an 8-week program where we work with athletes and parents to build emotional control, resilience, and confidence in real game situations. This isn't about just staying positive. It's about giving your child the tools to reset after mistakes, stay composed under pressure, and actually enjoy competing again. We only open a small number of spots at a time for serious families who are ready to make a real change. If that's you, head to thinkleak.com and apply to work with us.
Welcome back to the Think Leap podcast. Today's guest is Allison Solomon. She's an ADHD parenting coach, educator, and founder of the ADHD Parenting Bootcamp, where she has helped thousands of families better understand and support children with ADHD. As both a parent of three boys with ADHD and someone with ADHD herself, Allison combines lived experience with practical, evidence-based strategies that help families reduce conflict, build executive functioning skills, and strengthen parent-child relationships. She also brings a unique perspective as the mom of a son who went on to play professional soccer in the MLS, making her an incredible resource for parents raising ADHD athletes. Welcome, Allison. We're so glad to chat with you today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. So I just want to correct, he didn't actually make the MLS. He did actually pay for an academy and he was actually scouted by Arsenal Academy. But unfortunately, awesome. ADHD got in the way of that journey, which we can unpack. That was his dream, which didn't become his reality. And part of it was the fact that no one understood ADHD. And and it was a little bit of a mess up.
Got it. Thank you for correcting me. And that's something that we definitely are going to dive in today. And that's actually ties in with my first question. So being that you have ADHD yourself and have raised boys with ADHD, what can you tell me about raising these boys when you were younger, when ADHD wasn't really talked about, say 20 years ago, the way it is now? What was your what was parenting like for you?
You know, I think my one of the experiences I want to share was sitting in the car park, literally tears rolling down my eyes, not knowing how we were going to get through this. I looked at how the world washed their hands off my son. He was the great kid, but, and nobody knew how to deal with him. And I was just watching day in and day out how the light was going out in my child. And it wasn't that we hadn't tried occupational therapy. It wasn't that I hadn't taken him for cognitive behavioral therapy. It wasn't that he wasn't doing speech therapy. I mean, there wasn't a stone that I had left unturned, and things were just not getting better. And I just watched my son's self-esteem absolutely plummet. And I just remember sitting in that car park thinking, you know what? I've got to take control of this because all these professionals that I am relying on are not helping me and my family. And this is my son. And I'm going to fight tooth and nail to help him. And that began my journey of really understanding what ADHD is, how best to support my child, and then sharing that information with the people in his life so that we could allow him to become the person he was destined to be.
Awesome. So at what age was this approximately that you started to say, hey, this, we need to fix something here?
It was around about, so he was diagnosed in grade one. Okay. And I have to tell you, for the first 2 years, I was a complete deer in the headlights. I had no clue what was happening. I did everything wrong. And so around about grade three, when we had moved into a school that actually specialized in kids with ADHD, and I still wasn't seeing progress. I mean, my kid was struggling academically. He was struggling socially. He wasn't struggling on the soccer field because he was the star. Yeah. And so things were not lining up. So I'm going to say around about grade three, grade four was the tipping point for me as a parent to say, something has to change here. And I have to be the catalyst of change.
That's awesome that you were able to figure that out sooner rather than later. I think a lot of parents, I know a lot of parents that come to us that are interested in our program, they say, hey, you know, we thought and waited for it to get better. You know, we thought as they mature, it's going to naturally get better. And some things do, but some things do not, right? And it's like, okay, we could either wait and hope that it figures itself out, or we could just be super proactive and try to help them as early as possible because it can't hurt to get more support, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the biggest problem with ADHD is even though we're in the year 2026 and we talk about these things, there's a massive stigma related to it. And people are afraid to label their kids. So what will happen is your kid will have ADHD. You won't share that with the coach. The kid is going to demonstrate all their ADHD on the field. They're then going to be labeled as inconsistent, lazy, unmotivated, doesn't listen. And all you had to do was start by letting the coach know that your child has this diagnosis. You know, I said to parents, ADHD is not who my kid is. ADHD is part of my child. My child is not ADHD. And I am not embarrassed to tell you that my kid has ADHD. In fact, I'm pretty proud of my child. And if we as parents are afraid to shout from the rooftops that our kids have ADHD, A, what message are we sending to our children that you're broken and there's something wrong with you and you need to hide your diagnosis? And B, we're not giving coaches the right information to best support our children. So I am all about labeling and this notion of I'm afraid to tell people are going to judge my children. I've got news for you. People are already judging your children. Rather let them judge it with through the right lens.
Yes, that's a great, that is such a great point that you said, you know, it, we're afraid that they're going to be labeled if we share this information, but they're going to be labeled anyway, right? They're going to be the uncoachable child, right? They're going to be the one that is not easily distracted, can't paint, doesn't care. The crybaby, right? They're going to be labeled anyway. So why not share the information with the coach and also provide information and skills and strategies that will help him and the coach get along better and see eye to eye? So
I think you really hit the nail on the head because I always say to parents, telling a coach my child has ADHD is the most useless thing you can ever say. What does that, what does that create the image of? Right. The child who isn't going to focus, who's going to be the problem child. And now you've just written a narrative that doesn't exist. Yeah. So what really matters is what you said is my child has ADHD. These are some of the tools that he needs in order to shine and sharing that with the coach. The other thing is, and I think there's another piece that we as parents need to really focus on. Self-advocacy is a life skill. ADHD doesn't disappear. It's not something that's only in an academic context. It is a lifelong impairment that affects kids and adults 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yep. Your kid is going to need to learn to advocate for themselves at school, at university, and the workplace. And they need to be able to advocate on the soccer field. So by you advocating for your child, you are modeling what to do. And that is a lifelong skill, probably the most important skill that you can actually give to your child.
I 100% agree. We just talked to another podcast guest a couple weeks ago saying that, you know, if say your child is not getting a lot of playing time, right? And you might disagree, right? Because we're all biased. We always think our child's the best and deserves all the playing time. But what are you doing about it, right? And this is adversity that your child has to go through and figure it out on their own. So if you're going to be the one that's going to step in for them and say, hey, coach, you know, why is so-and-so not getting enough playing time? Can you tell? No. How about you tell the child, hey, okay, you're not getting playing time. They're smart, right? They'll figure it out. Let's give them more credit. What are you going to do about that, right? Yeah. Do you want to, how about you ask the coach, what are some things I can do to get better coach to get more playing time? Yeah. This is what they're going to be expected to do in high school and college if they decide to play. So I think that's,
And I think as parents, we have to be coaching our children. So, you know, I think it might be sort of practicing what that conversation is going to look like. You know, I always say, you know, we don't go play a game without preparing. You know, how many times do our kids, for example, my kids are soccer players, how many times do we practice penalty shootouts? We practice and we practice. And it's the same thing with those conversations. You know, you don't go into a conversation with a coach without practicing. What are you going to say? How are you going to deliver your message? And particularly for kids with ADHD who really struggle to read social cues, to be able to look at someone's face and understand how their information is being received, that coaching that you are doing as a parent is integral to help them to grow and to be able to deliver the message.
So you're saying before, so say that playing time is the issue, right? You're saying before practice, say the next day, you would say, okay, let's practice on what we're going to say to the coach together, well, right?
Let's prepare. Let's talk about why do you think you should be getting extra time?
Yeah.
How are you going to present that to the coach? And just run through it. Now, some kids are going to be able to do it. Some kids are not, so you may have to prompt them. But if you're not pre-doing that conversation, the kid is going to go in. Listen, there's a, you know, there's a one, the coach has more power than the child. So really the relationship is not equal. So the kid is going to go in, they're going to be intimidated. If that's the case, they're going to forget what they're going to say and they're going to blurt out something that's going to probably be inappropriate and the coach is going to be even more irritated. Whereas if we go in with a, that we've prepared, that we've practiced, it helps decrease their anxiety and allows them to deliver the message more effectively.
Sure. And I feel like, you know, it's like for my son, he is, he's very vocal, but at the same time, he's not somebody that wants to advocate for himself. That's not to say that we haven't, or that we haven't encouraged that, but for kids like him who are a little bit, I hate to use the word shy, but don't, you know, does not feel comfortable enough speaking up for themselves. Do you recommend, you know, say walking up with them as, you know, to the coach as they're saying this so that we can kind of be there to give them a little bit of support? Or do you recommend them just going all there on their own if they can do it?
Listen, I think he's young enough that he still needs support.
Yeah.
You know, what I would recommend in that situation is for him to either use your phone or if he has a phone, say, hey, coach, do you have 5 minutes just to sit down with me? I just want to talk. And I don't think we go about talking about playing time. I think we're going to talk about what I can be doing to get extra playing time. What do I need to be doing to improve? Okay. So already you're going into that conversation where the coach doesn't feel like they are being attacked because that's already game over. So I always like the pre-conversation. So the coach is also not caught unaware and the coach recognizes what is. And I would go with my kid because your kids are 8 and 9 and say, listen, I'm here for support. This is your meeting. But if you need me, I'm here. And if you want me to leave, I can leave as well. So always giving that child that option. But I think having that support is really important.
Yeah, I really love that. And I would I'm waiting for some type of situation to occur for us to be able to do that with our son. Because
I self-advocacy is one of the last sort of executive functioning skills to form. So he's really young. The you model, the more you practice.
But it starts now.
Yeah, exactly. It starts now. As I said, you know, I think the most underrated parenting strategy is modeling.
Yeah.
And they are like sponges. They are mopping it up. And so you don't have to only be modeling on the sports field. It's how you talk to other people. You know, if you're having a meeting with a client, you are somewhat nervous, even to say to your kid, oh my gosh, I've got to go on this podcast. I'm feeling a little bit anxious. You know, I wonder what I can do.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I'm going to suck some ice because that helps me to regulate. That is dynamite to a kid. Now he's learning that everybody's anxious and there are strategies. And so I think, you know, for me, one of the, my most important strategy is living out loud. Right?
Yes.
It's really narrating how you are feeling, what you are doing to solve the problem, because that's how our kids learn. If we say, well, what do you do when you've got anxiety? Like they feel attacked and they're going to shut down. But when we make it about ourselves and we're modeling it, that's when our kids are learning.
100%. I think not only what we do, but what we say also, they're listening, right? If we're saying something negative about the coach, then we're expecting them to go now say to the coach, hey, you know, well, what do I need to do to improve, coach? But in the back of their head, they're like, you're a terrible coach because my parents said so. Then that's not really going to
And listen, I also think that, you know, for me, I always say that, listen, as parents, we're going to screw up. We're human beings. That's what's going to happen. And when we say things that are wrong, well, your coach is such an idiot, whatever, because we're frustrated with the coach, is to come back and say to the kid, hey, you know what? I messed up yesterday. I was angry at myself, but actually I made it about your coach and that was wrong. So I think as parents, we mustn't be afraid to come back and apologize for when we mess up and say what we should have done differently.
Yes. And I think that is also connected to accountability. And a lot of kids aren't, you know, that's a skill that comes later in life. But we are big on teaching that right now, early on. And that's something that Derek does very well. If he makes a mistake, he always comes to them later and says, you know, I did not do that well, or I apologize for this, or that was my fault. And oh my gosh, that teaches them how to go about saying and apologizing or taking accountability, right? And
I have to say, in our house, there was one rule. All I expect you to do is to own your shit. Yeah. That is right. Because if they own it, they can be accountable. Yes. If you don't own it, you're never going to be accountable. I'm going to own my shit. So when I screw up, I'm going to apologize. I'm going to, and it's not just about the apologies, what I'm going to do differently. But when you do it, you have to own your shit. And so sometimes they'd be doing stuff like, okay, guys, you know what? Who's owning their shit right now? And they go, okay, I'm owning it. It wasn't like an armchair therapist. I just wanted them to acknowledge.
Yeah.
And then we could work on it.
And the first way to do that is to say, oh man, my bad. That was my fault. I should have done this differently. I love that. Own your shit.
Own your shit. That's our number one mantra in our house.
I love that. Okay. So a question that I would love to know personally as a parent, and I'm sure other listeners are going to be curious too, looking back as to what you thought may have mattered when you were parenting ADHD child or athlete, now, what do you think does not matter as much as you thought it did matter at that time?
Yeah. So I think that's a great question. And I think it would probably be the biggest mistake that we made. So for many of our kids, they struggle in so many areas in their lives. And then you have this kid who's this unbelievable athlete. It's the one area where kids shine. And we are told as parents, you know, our kids get so much negative feedback, put them in their passions and interests. That's how you're going to build their self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And we saw for the first time, this kid was experiencing success and our whole life revolved around soccer. Until my son didn't become Josh Solomon, he became Josh the soccer player. Mm-hmm. And his identity was merged into one. And we did not see this coming because we as all parents were coming from the best of intentions, giving our kid the opportunity to shine. Mm-hmm. And I think as parents, you know, we were so caught up in getting him into that D1 scholarship and we made a lot of sacrifices, which we thought were actually helping him, but what we actually shouldn't have, because we created that more of the problems than he would have had if he would have understood he wasn't just a soccer player. He was this most incredible human being, kind, caring, resilient. And those are the things we should have focused on as opposed to using soccer as the tool to make him feel good about himself.
Yeah. Okay. So that kind of ties into my next question. What ADHD traits do you think were an advantage and a disadvantage at the time for him?
Yeah, I think the advantage was the creativity. You know, he was the game maker. He could go onto the field and see things that other couldn't people do, and he could react so quickly and make it happen. And that was the beauty. The other thing was that hyper-focus. Like when he was on that soccer field and he had that ball on his feet, he could dribble through the entire team. He was unbelievably focused. So those were amazing traits. I think the disadvantage of ADHD is two things. Number one is the lack of consistency. So no, every team wants a player who's going to play the same most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want that great variation. Whereas when you have a kid with ADHD, one of the core deficits of ADHD is the lack of consistency. Oh, yeah. So on Monday, they show up and they are like the star. They are focused. They are doing what they need to do. And then on Tuesday, something happened before they got to the field and now they're not in the game. And that's really hard for a coach to manage. Now, we didn't understand that lack of consistency was part of ADHD. Had I known that, that would have been something I would have spoken to my coach about, explained it to him, and we could have brought in some tools to help him. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, and I want to talk about the elephant in the room, ADHD is never just ADHD. Studies show that 2/3 of kids with ADHD will have 2 or more comorbidities. Comorbidities include learning disabilities, include things like anxiety, depression, sensory processing. Mm-hmm. But anxiety and ADHD, I believe, are BFFs. And for our athletes, there's so much performance-based anxiety going on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we are talking enough about that anxiety, how it impacts it. When Josh started to show, and I should just mention that Josh has given me permission to speak about this. When Josh started to show these signs, we were told it was sports-induced asthma. They gave my kid a Ventolin pump.
Wow.
That's how missed it was. Now, again, I did not recognize ADHD and anxiety as BFFs. Had I recognized this, again, we would have used a different toolbox.
Yeah.
So for parents with kids who are these elite athletes, you've got to be thinking about it. Now, how you treat it, that is up to you. But knowing that it's coming or that it's there is really, really critical for their mental health. Because I think we kind of have to zoom out. We have to look at the whole child, everything that's going on, because that's what matters, right? Their mental health. You know, you'll go to an MLS team and they will have physios. I mean, the physio room where my kid played was unbelievable. There's not a sports psychologist. There's not a mental health psychologist in the building. We are completely missing the other part of athlete development. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem lies. So when we play soccer, even at the club level, the grassroots, everyone's concerned about physical conditioning. Oh, we'll warm those kids up because we don't want an injury.
Yeah.
But what are you doing about the mental side of the game? To me, it's even more important because it all begins and ends here. And if the mental game is not strong, you can have the most talented player in the entire world and they will not be able to perform.
Yep.
And so I think that the conversation we're having around sports and ADHD is the conversation needs to be about taking care of the mental part of the game. And I think if you look at some of the most successful athletes in the world, they've got it. They're doing it.
And I think a lot of parents are realizing that these days, and all the parents coming to us asking for the support, and it's like, oh my goodness. And all of the professional athletes that are talking about how they do the visualization, the meditation, because they realize that is a big part of the game. There's so many reels and clips that I pulled together to share with our mentees that show them, hey, your favorite athlete, guess what? They're also concerned and they also are very aware and work on their mental game just as much, if not more, than their physical game. Because you can't let that be your worst enemy.
I think personally, every parent and every coach should read a book. It's by George Mumford. Okay. And he was the coach who worked with Michael Jordan. I think he was in jail. He was a drug addict. He came out and he taught Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls how to visualize. He was the pioneer in this.
Amazing.
And this is a book that parents need to read. Coaches need to read, and as your child is old enough to read it, to read it.
Yes.
Because it's all about minding the mind, or the mind will mind you.
I've heard of that before, and I love that. I wonder if this was before he got cut from his team or after, right? Didn't he?
I tell my kids all the time, right? What is the famous story about Michael Jordan? He didn't make his high school basketball team, but he didn't give up.
He didn't give up. And all the parents, is a lesson for parents too. Hey, you can start late, right? And have extreme setbacks and be the worst one on the team, even as a teenager, and still make it to the level that you want to make it. We don't have to start them at 7 years old playing soccer all year round or whatever sport, right? Which I feel like.
Right. That early specialization. I think what's important for parents is to recognize why you're putting your kids in sport. Because the goal is not to get them a scholarship. The goal is not to get them to the NFL. The goal is not to get them to an MLS, because the percentage of kids that make that is limited. Yeah. The goal is to teach them discipline, to teach them resilience, to teach them grit, to teach them how to lose and how to win. That's what we are putting our kids in sports for. And I think what happens is we lose the goal. And then the goal becomes getting to be the best team and then getting a scholarship. And we lose what we're trying to achieve.
Bragging about our child. Right. It's all bragging rights. My child did this. Look, it's not about you, mom, dad, right?
Correct. And correct. And, you know, also, you know, we go to sports, you get involved with the other families. It becomes socialization for you. Oh, so you don't want your kid to quit the team because, hello, I'm going to lose all my friends. And now what are we going to do 5 nights a week if we have to sit and talk to each other? Now we're on the sports field. Right. You know, so there's a lot of actual selfishness that is going into this equation. And then when they do want to quit, we tell them, no, you can't quit. But is it about the kid or is it about you?
Exactly. And how afraid are they to even tell us, hey, I don't want to play anymore? Because the half of the athletes we work with, I feel like some of them may, you know, be afraid to say, hey, I don't want to, they don't want to let their parents down. Right. And that's a shame if they're playing for the parents, not themselves. Right.
Yeah. And you know, I have to say, I have three sons. So I had two who played soccer and one who was a swimmer, and my younger one, when he wanted to quit soccer, you know, said to him, look, you can quit soccer if this is not working out for you, but you have to replace it with something else. So you can take up boxing, you can take up parkour, whatever you want, but doing some type of physical activity is a non-negotiable.
Oh, yeah.
So you want it, you can replace it. And he then decided, actually, you know what, he'll carry on with soccer. But we gave him the opportunity to choose what he wanted to do.
That's awesome.
And I think that parents will know, and you put in so much effort and I put in so much money and you can't walk away from it. And I think we just have to step back and let them, give them choice and control within those parameters. And I think that's what parenting is, right? We set the parameters and we give them choice and control. And the parameter is, you don't have to do soccer, you don't have to do basketball, but you're going to do something physically, activity, because that's a family value that we hold into. You choose what you want to do.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's really important. We as well with our son, our younger son is not as into sports as my older son. He's the one that is neurotypical. He would sit on the couch all day and watch TV if we let him, right? So we said, no, you have to pick something, whatever it is. We're not going to push it, but pick something. And then if you do it, you're going to stick with it, right? So that's something that we value as well.
And I love that, because I think that, you know, screens are addictive and we are losing so many kids to screen addiction. And so we have to encourage our kids to do extracurriculars, to get out of the house, to meet other people. That's where you learn skills.
Yes. Yeah. And to know when, if you are going to give screens, because it's not realistic to remove them from your life entirely, right? When are you giving them the screen? Is it right before practice or games? Because guess what? That's probably why they don't want to go to practice, or why they're not focused at practice, because they're still mentally focused on that level they didn't beat or what they still want to build when they get home. So it still carries over into many, you know, in sports, you know, games and practices. And I don't think parents realize how much it really affects it.
I 100% agree. Listen, timing is everything, right? Yeah. So it's making sure that before we go to practice, what does my kid need in order to be regulated by the time they get to practice? Now, I'm going to tell you, some kids do need screens. For them, that's regulating. That kid who's scrolling aimlessly through TikTok or looking at funny memes, that's kind of regulating them. That's okay. Some kids are listening to music. That regulates them. So it's really important to know, but by the time you get to that field, what does your kid need in order to enter the baseball pitch or whatever you call it, the soccer pitch or the swimming pool regulated?
Yeah. I would love to. Yeah, I 100% agree. Everybody's different. And as parents, it's our responsibility to figure out and talk to your child what gets you ready, right? And they may say something gets them ready for the game, but then they have a poor performance. And it's like, okay, well, maybe it didn't. Let's revisit that and work on maybe like a pregame routine or something that works for them, because we all know that structure is the best for ADHD children. So what is your, if you don't have a pregame routine or a meal or something, let's try to figure something out, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I love it. And you know, for me, it was always getting, you know, the thing is with parents, we think we know what is best for them. And most of the time we do, but we like to enforce our will on them. And maybe when they're 6 and 7, that works. But I can tell you, the minute they hit 12, you're out to lunch. Yeah. That's never going to work. So really what I encourage parents to do is to really focus on buy-in. So instead of saying, well, you know, you ate a Mars bar before you went to practice, and that's why you suck today. Like, just put a fuck in the kid's going to tell you to get lost. you know, what worked for you today? Mm-hmm. What didn't work? Letting the kids start to see and answer the questions as opposed to you enforcing your will. Let's try it. Let's eat next week. You know what? Let's eat 3 Mars bars before our games and see what happens. And let's see if we don't eat them. Yeah. Kids learn through doing. They don't learn through lecturing. They learn by doing. So the more we can get them doing, the more we can get them experimenting, the more we can get them to see the results, the more buy-in and the better results you're going to get.
Yes, I love that. And something that we also, I think, are in encouraging our kids to do is see what works for you, and just awareness of, hey, okay, I am giving them a little bit more control, advocating for themselves. It all kind of connected, right? I want to go back to what you said about anxiety and ADHD being best friends, because a lot of parents do come to us with performance anxiety struggles with their child. What would you, any tips or recommendations that parents can kind of take away today to help their child with performance anxiety, right? They do really good at practices, but once it comes to the game or the competition or performance, they freeze up, or they don't perform 100% because they're trying to hold back. What would you say?
Listen, I think if your kid has severe performance anxiety, this is not something you as a parent can handle on your own. Mm-hmm. I mean that quite honestly. This is the point where you bring in specialists to really help your kid.
Yeah.
I think that we think it's performance anxiety. I think it's more than that. Mm-hmm. I think what you're seeing is a lot of kids with ADHD, because they have received such negative feedback. We know that by the time a child is 12 years old, they've received 20,000 more negative messages than their peer group. Yeah. You're dealing with a bunch of kids who have been told over and over again who you are and what you do is not good enough.
Yeah.
And so in order to protect that fragile self-esteem, many of them become perfectionists.
Mm-hmm.
And perfectionists can't deal with failure.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So we're really dealing with a perfectionist cycle. And so sometimes for the perfectionist, that fear of failure is so crippling mm-hmm. that they can't perform. And so what we need to do, I think, is to, as if they have severe, I would definitely get help, but to actually start to normalize that perfectionism is both good and bad, right? It's good that you want to do well. It's mm-hmm. good that you get upset when you lose. Mm-hmm. I'm not upset when my kids freak out because they lose. I want them to be upset. That shows yeah. their passion and their thing.
Yeah.
So perfection, but it becomes debilitating mm-hmm. when it's impacting your performance. So yeah. I think it's the other thing it is normalizing mistakes.
Oh my gosh, you said what I was going to say, Allison.
Right?
I just had this conversation with a parent because she said, and I'll let you finish what you're saying in a second, but she was saying, and the child told me, they say, don't try not to make any more mistakes. And I said, whoa, wait, mistakes are experiences and we learn from experiences. So you're never going to get better if you're not making mistakes. Let's celebrate mistakes, but let's not keep doing the same thing over and over. Let's fix, learn and fix, right?
You know, it's so interesting because one of our we have a family mantra, and it actually comes from Star Wars. So it's called do or do not. There is no try. And the reason why I say this is try is the most negative word. Mm-hmm. Try means if I fail, it's okay. And before you even started, you've given up. So I would mm-hmm. say to my kids, do or do not. There is no try. I don't care how many times you fail. I don't care how many mistakes you make. Mm-hmm. What I care about is that you get back up
yep.
and you keep on fighting.
Yep.
And that's the message. So you are going to make mistakes. You are going to screw it up. Yep. You are going to have great games and you're going to yep. have shit games. And that's called life. But what matters is how we deal with that card that we are given, right? Yes.
And what we're saying to them, and also, you know, and immediately when they finish the game or practice, not talking about.
Oh my gosh. You know what every parent needs? Duct tape. Shut the fluff up. It is not a time to discuss mm-hmm. the game. Mm-hmm. Do you think your kid doesn't know that they screwed up?
Yeah.
Do you think your kid is not upset? Yeah. And now the brain is completely dysregulated. So they're mm-hmm. in the amygdala has hijacked the front part of the brain, the part mm-hmm. of the brain that can hear reason and logic and wise words. And now you want to have a conversation and then you yeah. wonder why the kid gives up the sport. It's not the time. Just shut the fluff up. Mm-hmm. You know, I think as parents, we're so afraid of silence and we have to get used to silence because silence is golden.
That is such a common theme. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Right. And so for me, it was always we'd get in the car. I would say, I'm proud of you. That's it. And what I would find, we would drive 25 minutes. It would honestly, I would just like want to just vomit yeah. everything. Yeah. Duct tape, shut the fluff up, shut the fluff up. And inevitably, 4 or 5 hours later, they'd come and talk to me about it.
Yeah. That's nice. That's the kind of relationship we want to have with our kids, you know, when they're older, and not to fear mistakes or fear talking to anything about us because they are afraid we're going to judge them. Or, you know, a lot of the times it's we talk too much. I think that's 100% accurate. I think we like maybe we don't as parents know exactly what to say. So we overcompensate and we just say too much to try to cover it all. But a lot of the time, if we keep it quiet and let them talk and let them know, hey, I'm here if you want to just, you know, talk about what happened or that, a lot of the time they will talk to you. I think that's one thing that I'm trying to strive as a mother and Derek as a father is to keep those lines of communications open. So that when they are ready to talk, they do feel comfortable because it's not going to get easier as they get older. It's only going to get harder to get them to talk. Do you agree?
100%. And I'm going to tell you that what are the therapists saying? They're saying that these teens and tweens are coming in and they're saying, I'm not listening to my parents because my parents don't listen to me.
Yeah.
And the problem with parents are, I always say there's two types of parents. So I am the fixer parent. That is the empath. Yeah. I will try to provide reason and logic, and I will try to logic away all of those emotions, and I love to fix, and I can't tolerate my kids to stress, and I want to go in and protect them.
Yeah.
So if you're an empath like me, you're a fixer parent. So fixer parents, mm-hmm. we can't shut the fluff up. We just go launching in to fix, to problem solve. Oh, the coach was an idiot. That was a bad ref. You didn't get, we will find a million ways to make that kid feel better, which is absolutely detrimental. And then we have the fighter parent. So the fighter parent is the boxing glove parent. You're going to come in. Well, you just would have trained harder this week. And mm-hmm. if you would have gone out and you would have done 14 more penalty kicks, you wouldn't have missed it. Mm-hmm. So we as parents have to own our shit. If you're the mm-hmm. fighter parent, you have to shut the fight, the fixer parent, you've got to learn to shut mm-hmm. the fluff up. You yeah. cannot fix and solve every problem. Mm-hmm. And sorry, for fighter parents, you got to learn to shut the fluff up, because yeah. your threat, your punishments, your consequences is not helping your child. Yeah. And the reason why I think this is so important, at the end of the day, the only variable that's going to affect your child's success in life is a relationship between parent and child. That is it. That is all you have. Listen, we know that our kids with ADHD have a far higher propensity for addiction, screen addiction, porn, yeah. gambling, depression, drugs, alcohol, whatever.
Yes.
It is a statistic. Yes. It exists. And the antidote to addiction is connection. And that is your relationship. Now, I cannot guarantee that if you have a great relationship, your kid is not going to have any of those addictions. Of course, I can't. But if we look at the studies are shown that when the child felt connected to the parent, the rates of depression, the rates of addiction went down significantly. And the problem with sports parents are we get so swept up in it all, and it jeopardizes the most important thing, mm-hmm. and that is our relationship. When your kids don't want to come to the game because they can't bear the criticism, mm-hmm. you have lost the game.
Yeah, I agree. And we need to just realize, hey, we need to put trust in the coach and let the coach do the coaching, and we stick to our parenting lane. Don't try to do both, right?
My gosh, I love that. The best advice I ever give parents is don't be his teacher, be his mother, and mm-hmm. don't be his coach, be his mom or his dad. Exactly. Stay in your lane. The minute those two cross, it's a disaster.
I 100% agree. And that's something that's very hard, like for those empaths, parents, helicopter parents that want to try to do everything for their child and support them. I think people confuse support with overstepping your bounds, right? And going a little too far. But I think if anything, stepping back and letting them, you know, giving them time to think and react. And I think that's always the safer side to err, right?
100%.
So let me ask you, looking back, you know, on your growing, you know, raising boys, growing up with ADHD, what's the one thing that you think they needed from you most during their adolescent years, sports or sports, not sports related, either or?
I think the most important thing was, do you see me? Do you hear me? Do you understand me? That was it. And so when you make your child feel seen, heard, and understood, that's when everything changes. And how do we do that? It's about really parenting. You know, parenting is two wings. One is that beautiful empathy, that connection, that understanding. Mm-hmm. But kids need guardrails.
Yeah. Yes.
And you can't have one without the other. So what tends to happen is we are lovely empaths, but suck at boundaries.
Yeah.
And our kids need both.
Yeah.
So you have to be balancing both. So you can be understanding, and all feelings are welcome in our house, but what we do with the feelings matters.
Yeah.
Right. And so for my kids, what really was that I was very empathetic. I wasn't the best at boundary setting, but my husband was. So we kind of balanced each other out. I'm getting better at boundary setting, but what kids with ADHD need, they need that empathy, that understanding, but they absolutely need those guardrails. They need that structure. They need daily expectations. And when you meet expectations, privileges are earned. You know, one of the things we had was that if you didn't do your homework, you didn't go to practice, and you texted the coach, not my responsibility. Mm-hmm. And what was the result of that? Well, in our soccer school, if you didn't come to practice, you got benched at the game. You'd have to attend the game, sit on the bench, but you wouldn't play. That was enough motivation to get my kids to do their homework. But if they didn't, there wasn't, that was their choice.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. Yeah. And having, letting them deal with the consequences on their own. Right. So if they don't go to practice, okay. Hey, that's your decision, especially if they're older, you know, tweens, teenagers. Okay. Well, let the coach know why. And then whatever his consequences are, so be it. Take it like a man, right? Or a woman.
Yeah, correct. But you want, most parents will be, oh no, I don't want my coach to get upset and I don't want my kid not to have playing time. So what do? We go, oh, it's okay. He's having a bad day. Yeah. And this is where everything, he's not feeling well. So they'll make I'll overcompensate. Yeah. And that's just the worst thing for these kids. Because then you don't teach accountability. You don't teach them actions have consequences.
Exactly.
And you don't teach them to sit in the frustration. Yeah. So if they can't sit in the frustration because you rush in to fix and correct it, how the hell are they going to do it on the soccer field if they've never experienced frustration?
Yeah. What about kids that are, you know, they don't really prepare and they should have a pregame routine. You should have, you know, everything prepared the night before, I always say, so that you're not rushing around and creating more anxiety before games or practices. But what about those players that are those kids that kind of wait till last minute, as ADHD kids do? They have no time, right? They can't figure out, oh, I have 5 minutes left. Okay, I'm going to use my time wisely. It's always last minute scurrying. So they end up being late to practice. And then, you know, the parents at that point may apologize for the child or say, you know, it's my fault, or end up yelling at the child and not giving him a consequence. So do you think there should be a consequence for, and this goes for being late to school as well, right? I don't care if I'm late, mom, dad.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful question. So a couple of things here. We know that organizational skills is a deficit of ADHD. Mm-hmm. So the question I would ask is, how are we supporting the child in being organized?
Yeah.
You know, if your child is 8 and their executive functioning skills are that of a 5-year-old, and you're just expecting him to get ready and be done, like you're out to lunch because you're missing what ADHD is, right? Yeah. So what I think we have to do is, first of all, is help the child develop a system, recognize that as you're developing a system, yes, they might forget, it might not go according to plan, and that's okay. We're here to build skills. Once the system is up and running, and then the child is choosing not to use the system, well, then we have a consequence.
Yeah, I love that.
We don't just give a consequence if the child hasn't put the system in and we haven't worked with the child and we haven't given the child grace to learn and fail a little bit in that system. Mm-hmm. But once the system is up and running and the child is then choosing not to, well, then that's a different story, because then you've given the kid the skill and now it's a choice. But I can just tell you personally, I don't think any kid chooses not to be ready for practice. Practice for them is the highlight of the day. They get to go outside, be with their friends.
Yeah,
I think the thing is that many of us who parenting these kids, we're completely different. So we're organizing. We want everything organized. And then we've got this kid who like manages to pull his shit together in the last 5 minutes, but we can't take it because it's anxiety provoking for us. We're like, oh my God, just put your uniform out. Yeah. And if you would just, and he's like, Mom, like, what the frick is your problem? Everything's ready. I'm in the car and you freaking out. So a little bit of this parenting thing is saying, is this actually about my child or is this about my anxiety?
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's about the parent, not the child.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so if there's one thing that you can, or a tip, recommendation for routines that parents could kind of put in place right away, if a parent is listening saying, I don't really have a routine, right? They come home, they wake up, they maybe brush their teeth, may eat breakfast, maybe if they have time, and then they go to school, come home, and then we don't know what to do when they come home. Is there one routine now that school's starting that you think parents should immediately put in place to help their ADHD child?
I think that's a great question. And my answer to that would be, think about what is the hardest part of your day and focus on that part of the day to introduce. Mm-hmm. So if getting that kid out of bed in the morning is an absolute train smash, that's where you want to start. Mm-hmm. If homework is a complete train smash and the kids come home, you're exhausted, you've been at work all day, then focus on that. So I would pick what is the most pain point in your family and start there. The thing about routines are, the reason why we have a routine is that we're trying to get the kid to be more regulated, that they don't have to think about things. That's what the purpose of a routine is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when your kids are younger, you want to make sure that that routine is visual. because words on a piece of paper mean nothing. So, and when I say visual, I mean pictures of the child doing the routine in the order of the routine. Don't take it off Pinterest. Don't take off clip art. None of that works. It must be a picture of it. And when they are older, it's to say, what's going to help you to remember your routine? Would you like to put it on a whiteboard? What a giant post-it note? What would work for you? And then, you know, for example, like if you've got a 16-year-old and you're still going in and waking up your 16-year-old, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
Because that's sixth, right? So what are you going to do? In that thing, you're going to say, listen, I'm no longer in charge of waking you up. If you choose not to wake up in the morning and be late for school, this is what the consequences are going to be. You do you. And I'm going to tell you, and you know, some of the things you could do is that if you miss the bus, then you then and I have to take you for every minute that I am delayed, you are going to pay me back in chores. If you have to take an Uber, I'm taking it out of your pocket money.
Yeah.
If you don't make, I call it the nudge theory. You got to nudge them out of their comfort zone in order to get to do something. And if you are going in every morning, waking up that kid, why would the kid get up?
What are they learning? They're not learning anything. Mama wake up.
And there's zero motivation. These idiot parents are going to come in. They're going to cajole me. They're going to do it. So why that? Because he's a 16-year-old kid, and that's what 16-year-olds do. That's not rude to find. That's what kids do.
They do. Yeah. So, if you let them.
Right. And again, what is blocking the parent? Oh, I don't want my kids to miss school, because if they miss school and they're not going to get into Harvard, I'm like, hold on a second. 1 day, 2 days. Like,
or they try to avoid the conflict, which again, is not fixing anything. It's just avoiding the problem, right?
Right. And then so what happens is that parent becomes a resentful parent because they're so angry and frustrated. And then you projectile vomit it all onto your child. And it's just a shit show. So a lot of this journey is, and I know parents don't want to hear this, you can't change your child. Sorry. They come with a certain DNA. They are who they are. The only person you can change in this little dance is you. It's how you show up. It's how you react, how you are dealing with your issues and not projectiling onto your child. And that's really what I help parents to understand, because that child is their child. It's you who's the only one they can change.
I love that. Can you tell parents how, where they can find you and how you kind of can help them? And you know, what mainly you're looking for when people come to you, you know, is
Beautiful. So I do three things. Number one, I run a 5-week ADHD parenting bootcamp where I meet with parents once a week for 90 minutes. And then we meet every day in a private chat where I have a curriculum which basically helps you to stop all those behaviors, teach your child the skills they need to in order to be independent adults, and teach you how to parent their child. And part of that is learning to shut the fluff up. All my beautiful fixer parents and fighter parents, I help you through that. I also do one-on-one coaching. I also go into schools to educate teachers as to how best to teach our children. And the best way to find me is you can either get me on Instagram at Allison, I believe it's at Allison Lee Solomon.
I'll put a link in.
And I have a website, I think it's www.allisonsolomon.com. I'm not very tech savvy, but I believe those are my, and I'm also on TikTok, but I'll send you all my.
You're not tech savvy, but I'm on Instagram. I have 100,000 followers. I'm on TikTok.
I think with all the platforms, I've got like over half a million followers, but I'm just not tech savvy. I just wake up, decide what I'm going to do and post it.
You're doing great. You offer so much valuable tips to all of, you know, to me, to, you know, when we come across your content, to all of our listeners, I feel like they're going to take so much out of this. I'll add all the links in our description, show notes, and then on our YouTube, all of that, so that people can find you and get support if they need. And I truly believe parents are if not more responsible for helping their child grow into an independent child, right? So I think parents need to look at themselves in the mirror a little bit more, right? And I think you did a good job explaining why.
Beautiful. And thank you for what you're doing. I have to, you know, when Josh was going through this, I looked far and wide for a sports psychologist. We couldn't find one. I eventually had to use someone from the UK via Zoom to do it. So what you're doing is so valuable and so amazing. So thank you for what you're doing. I wish you would have been around when my son was struggling.
Oh, thanks so much for that. Yeah, we try. We're trying to be super supportive and be that resource that parents need, you know, and for their athletes. So if they just take both of our programs, they're going to be golden, right?
That's right. They get the trifecta.
All right. Thanks so much, Allison.